Major Potts, Reel 12.
You were saying that the native policemen were trained separately from the...
Yeah, they were trained at the old, what was the...
You were saying that the policemen didn't meet their officers until later.
No, they were trained at the police school, which was near Neary, and they did all their training there. How long, I do not know. The only police as such that we trained were Asians, but the Asian recruiting was appalling. The Asians didn't want to know. And of course the Asians and the Africans didn't get on anyway. We had to produce, we were supposed to produce at least 6 or 8 general service units, which were about 25 men, with, and the leader was an Asian, and all the other two officers were Asian, and all the rest of the policemen were Asian. But we only did 3. The Asians were not interested in the emergency. It didn't make money. So there it was. So I wouldn't say any more about them.
What about the quality of your European recruits who you were training at Gilgil?
I thought some of them were very good. Some were very poor. Some came up from South Africa, Boers. I've never had a great liking for the Boer. I always thought they were bully boys. I suppose they were average for the type of work they were going to do, and many of them would only be senior NCOs or junior officers on a very short service commission. That type of person. I don't think they kept very many on afterwards.
Did you actually devise your own syllabus for the instruction?
No, I devised it myself.
You did?
Yeah, and the police didn't have really. Jack Carter had spent years in the NFD and that sort of thing. All his job was, mandate was to get all these people trained. And I don't know how long we had them. 4, 6 weeks? I was there for 6 months anyway.
So you saw a number of courses going through.
Well, I saw the whole lot go through,
yes.
the whole 400. And
was that the overall total figure then?
I think the 400 was about the total figure.
Yeah.
And I saw the whole lot through. I've met one or two since. I got one who corresponds with me. He was a complete and utter BF. But there you are. I think we did a reasonable job.
Oh
yeah, I took them out on field exercises, take them out on everything. I was quite well worked, but they also had to do a bit of law and powers of arrest, and they had to do a bit of Swahili learning because they were they had to communicate with their policemen.
Were there emergency powers available to the police by this stage?
Yes, when we went into Kenya, the emergency powers had been, it had been declared a state of emergency. A number of police stations had been attacked. The biggest one was Naivasha Police Station, where they took about 50 weapons. And of course, there had been the Lari Massacre, where they had murdered well over 100 children and women. And although the number of Europeans murdered during Myanmar was very limited. Number of soldiers killed, I don't know how many. Wavell was killed, Wavell's son was killed there. But there weren't an awful lot. I mean, the Kikuyu, or the Myanmar who were Kikuyu, murdered a lot of Africans. Really intimidation.
Well, they would be the soft targets, wouldn't
oh,
they?
Oh, soft targets, yes. And it was to increase their people who were going to be Mau Mau in the forests.
Of course, by the time you got yourself organised, the police and other security forces would represent relatively hard targets.
Very hard, yeah. They didn't like that too
big
much.
Price to be paid for attacking you.
Well, that's right. You never attack a hard target. Well, not even in the military, if you can get away with it. We didn't have too many problems with the police. We got rid of a few of them. We sent them back. It came out they weren't amenable to discipline, or they were drinking too heavily, or something like that, and so they were got rid of. But I had nothing to do with their discipline at all.
Who did you have to assist you on the staff of this training, Mr. Poole?
There was a. I can't remember. I think there was one other officer, and he had a group as well. We got on and did what we had to do. And we reported to Jack Carter or Ted Onslow if we had a problem. I didn't have any problems at that stage. They were only going to be one pippers. And they were only there on a 3-year commission, if you like. I think some of them stayed on a bit longer than that, but there you are.
Were you able to draw on your own experience in Malaya to?
Well, yeah, because some of these guys, of course, had been in Malaya, and they were quite good guys to have around. Ones who'd been in Palestine weren't much use.
Why was that?
Well, Palestine was a different situation. It was immigration control. A lot of it, and a lot of it was policing in a sort of urban area. Yeah, they were going to police in a rural area. And as a result, we were aiming at the rural areas.
Did you include intelligence work as part of the sort of instruction?
Well, we had no intelligence at the time I was there. There were not very many informers. Informers started coming in. The army employed one or two DMIOs, deputy military intelligence officers, ones I came across, I didn't think were very much caliber. They most probably didn't think I was of much caliber, but there you go. We hadn't worked up to gangs and counter gangs and that type of thing. There were two or three chaps like Bernard Ruck and one or two others who ran their own sort of show. But Mau Mau was in 54, which this was, 53, 54, or 54, 50, yeah, 54, was at its maximum.
What were they up to at that time?
Well, main activity was getting food, getting a lot of helpers, oafing people. The oafing ceremony was the be-all and end-all. And the oafing ceremony did have a problem that once a person had been oafed, it was only a witch doctor who could un-oaf them, if you like. And some of them were so bestial. The oaths that I had my doubts about whether they really were as bad as that, but I think they were. I got to know a chap quite well called Dr. L.S.B. Leakey and talked to him quite a lot. You might have heard of him,
yes.
The anthropologist. Yes. He was an interesting man, and he told me the background of it. He was on Jomo Kenyatta's trial. I'm not sure that Jomo Kenyatta was ever Mama. I think he was framed because he was the only African leader. Unfortunately, his defence lawyer was this chap Pitt, who was a rabid left winger, and of course was, you know, not liked by the settlers of Kenya.
What did Leakey tell you about the Mau Mau?
Well, he told me about the Mau Mau and how it was really against the teachings of the elders. And I learned a lot about Africans, really, from him. And having just come to Kenya myself, he told me the problems of Africans. He was brought up there. His parents were one of the first missionaries. You most probably know this, but when he went to Cambridge, I think it was either Oxford or Cambridge, he went to take anthropology. And when he was there, they said, you have to have another subject to take. You cannot just be qualified in one. You've got to take two, subsidiary. So he said, I will take Kikuyu as my secondary subject. So that threw the colonial office into complete and utter chaos. And they signalled Nairobi, saying, we have a chap here at university. He wishes to take Kikuyu. And we have nobody who can teach him or anything. Can you advise us? And they got a signal back saying, yeah, there's a chap called LSB Leakey. He is the biggest exponent of Kikuyu in Kenya. So they gave him a pass. he was a very interesting man. He told me about the way the African mind works on certain things. And he didn't think that Mau Mau would spread as much as it did, but he did say that it was against the tribal condition or tribal teachings, and that how it was all divided up, and how where God was in Gai, and Gai lived on Mount Kenya, and basically he just said, told me a lot about the Africans and the way they behaved, and how in a lot of places they didn't have chiefs, they had tribal leaders, and the English had pushed in chiefs. Well, it was all right in some, but in a lot of places there weren't such things as chiefs. They didn't know anything about it. And also the land problem. One of the big things was that land up on the Laikipia and on the plains, the Africans thought that they were only lending it to the whites. They weren't, because they were pastoral people, especially the Maasai and Samburu and people like that. And they were only lending it to the whites. And then they found that the whites said, you can't come back. That was the way their mind worked. All very interesting. I could go on about it for a long time.
Did he recommend any remedial measures against the Mau Mau?
Not really. I think he was pretty fed up with the whole thing, and he was pretty fed up with the trial that they had at Lokitong, which I think he didn't say so, but I think he thought it was a fix. I rather gathered it, and I thought it was a fix. But the Kenya settlers thought it was wonderful. And then the Kenya settlers, every Kenya settler was a politician. And if there were 10,000 Kenya settlers, there were 10,000 lots of politics.
What happened when you came to the end of your spell with the police? Was there a taxi and truck?
I
you went back to the battalion.
I went back to the battalion. Mm. And the usual old thing. Commanding officer wants to see you. So I said, oh. I went to see him next morning to find out what my new job was. Ah, he said, you're back. Now, have you thought of joining the KAR, he said. I said, no, I hadn't actually. Ah, now, the KAR are very short of officers. Over half of the officers have been sacked, being incompetent, or too old, or being useless. And as I told you before, I've got one or two officers who are not competent for anything. I want you to go to the KAR. He said, yes, you'll have to volunteer. I said, what do you mean volunteer? He said, well, you won't get your KAR special pay unless you volunteer to go to the KAR. So I said, and he said, we'd like you to go to 7 KAR. Here's your application form, sign it, and that's it. Following morning, I was on my way to Nanyuki to join 7 KAR. So I arrived in 7 KAR, and they said, oh, you're as captain. You know, I was lieutenant. And the CO saw me. He said, oh, your seniority, you're a captain now. So I was a captain. So that was good. And nothing happened for, I went to a KAR company, but I'll come back to that. About 8 weeks later, I received a letter from the colonel of the regiment saying, I'm disgusted with you volunteering for the KAR when I just let you have a regular commission in the regiment. CO hadn't told him I volunteered. I hadn't volunteered. I only volunteered so that I got the money. I'd have been an idiot not to. Anyway, so the colonel of the regiment thought I took no notice of it. I tore it up. I should have kept it.
You shouldn't have. Did you think of applying to it?
I did, and I thought it won't get anywhere. So there it was, and I was in the KAR. Suddenly arrived in the KAR and went to the company. I was told that the company consisted of a sergeant major, company commander, myself and a Kenya Regiment 2nd Lieutenant. When I got to the company, there was a sergeant major, and there was nobody else. Where's the company commander? He's gone to Nairobi for a fortnight on leave. And I said, well, this is a bit... I didn't know what to think. I really didn't know what to think. Then...
Where were your soldiers from in the...
A lot of them were Northern Frontier District, and Nandi and Samburu. They're warrior classes.
What about your sergeant major?
He's a good chap. He was Queen's Regiment. Can't remember Harrison, his name was.
Yeah.
He became a lieutenant colonel, quartermaster. Good officer.
Did you have European sergeants in the...
No, nothing.
So,
nothing.
So you and the sergeant major were the only two...
Yeah, and I just arrived, and I couldn't speak. I could just say Jambo. And then first thing I got was go down to battalion headquarters. So I went down to battalion headquarters, having just come from there. I went down, and they said, we've got a big operation on tomorrow. It was the time that General China was negotiating, they said, a ceasefire. And all the gangs were in southeast Kenya, and my KAR company was on the edge of southeast Kenya. And there are hundreds of these guys coming down, and they're all going to surrender. We're going to carry out a big op, but we've got to find out more about it, and there'll be an A group in 2 days' time. Well, no African was allowed within, I think, a mile of the edge of the forest. We were not allowed to carry out any patrols, we weren't allowed to do anything, because it might stop risk surrender by General China. I was thrown in at the deep end here, really thrown in at the deep end. The Sergeant Major was... He was just as much miffed as I was.
How long had he been with the KAR?
Oh, about 3 months.
Oh. So he was a bit more settled in.
He's a bit more settled in. But, and he said to me, he said, your company commander, your boss is not good. He's an ex-corporal of horse. And he's not interested. He was East Yorks. Anyway, it eventually transpired that the Mama were told to get in the forest and stay there, and that we were negotiating. Well, they didn't go in the forest, and they were known to be in the reserve taking food into the forest and everything else. And it was decided to have a sweep of a certain area, and one company would sweep down, followed by a second company would go behind it. We'd have a third company on the far side, which was a company from 23 KAR. My company was at the other side of the square, and there was a company at the bottom of the sweep. So we're all going to be led in by night, and it all went terribly well. And everybody got...
You were actually setting up a stop line, were you?
I was on the looking out over the area that was being swept.
Yeah.
And anyway, we all went out, and we all got into position at 2 o'clock in the morning. And actually, the African moves very well at night. Europeans can't. And anyway, we were all ready. I was in the middle of the line, and at whatever time first light was, we started to move. And I didn't start to move. We followed on behind. The two flank companies would then follow on as a second wave.
Pushing in behind.
Yeah. And anyway, within 5 minutes, there was machine gun fire everywhere, and there was shooting. And I went to ground, being a coward. Anyway, and then suddenly a chap right in front of me started running, and he got out of the ground, and he was a Mau Mau, and we shot him. And anyway, at the end of the day, we shot quite a lot of Mau Mau, a truck full, I can't remember how many, and they were coming out of old drums in the ground where they buried themselves in drums and put a top on.
Oil drums.
And anyway, and we captured about 45 of these people, 40, 45, and the press was there and everything. No, and anyway, the Home Guard were there, the Home Guard were there too, and they blew the head off one chap in front of the press. Well, the Home Guard didn't like the look of him and said he was a Mau Mau and shot him, just blew his head off. And then it all went, they all went off down to Karatina police station, all the dead and all the captured. And lots of people saying it was an atrocity. I can't remember the numbers, but there were quite a lot. So that was the end of that. And we all went home fairly happy. And
how did your company actually form? Were you all in one long line?
Well, it was there was a long line down the two sides of the square, and where the forest was, the one company swept forward down. It was fairly open country, a lot of banana plantation, that sort of thing. And they swept down, and then the ends of the two companies on each side sort of came in curled in on a second sweep. Now down the bottom, down around the bottom right-hand corner of the sweep, which was in our area, there was a swamp, 30 acres, and I thought, when we got home, I said, I'm not very happy about the 30 acres there. We never went into it. I wonder if there's anybody in it. And I worried about it all day, and I said, right, we'll go down tomorrow and we'll go through that. Well, we went through that and we shot five more. They were in there. They had a little hide. It was sort of elephant grass swamp. We got five. So I was very pleased with that. Sent the bodies down to Karatina. One was an ex-soldier. He was a cook, a Kikuyu cook. So after that,
how many soldiers did you have in your company then?
Oh, it was quite a large company, 140, 130, 140. I'm not certain whether it was 3 platoons or 4 platoons. And most of the platoons were commanded by warrant officer platoon commanders. And of course, if your warrant officer platoon commander was a Samburu, all the NCOs were Samburu, because he only recommended Samburu to be NCOs. Likewise with the Wakamba and anybody else.
How did you communicate with them then?
Some of them spoke English quite well, and they interpreted. I didn't find any difficulty in communicating with them, laugh with them. They were good fun.
What was their level of military skills? Were they good soldiers?
Not bad at all. Not bad in a limited way. Mm. I.e., when I say a limited way, they were good shots, good field craft. They knew their basic section tactics. Map reading they didn't have anything to do with. They were good trackers, and they were of a happy disposition. Well, that's two-thirds of the way there anyway. And well, I enjoyed them very much. And anyway, my second lieutenant came back. He'd been somewhere, I can't remember. He was pretty annoyed. So we set off on a... He said, I think there's some caves further down, about half a mile further on from where we were, where we'd done this sweep. So the next morning, we went down, took down a platoon, and we got to these caves, and we shouted in with a tannoy. We had a tannoy thing. Come out and we'll shoot you. And there was no reply, no nothing. And we thought, well, we'll lob a few grenades in and see what happens. And we got 5 or 6 from in there. Mind you, they were all dead by the time we finished with them. You didn't capture too many Mau Mau. Waste of money. Shouldn't say that, should I? That's not politically correct. So we had 5 or 6 more bodies to send down to Karatina. And then everything went very quiet. And General China was arrested, was sent back to the jungle, and of course took him another 18 months to capture him again. And we just did patrols around the area and liaison with the Home Guard. And then we got the notice to move up to the settled areas, i.e. the settlers' areas. And we went up to Squares Farm, and we settled in the old dairy there. We put tents up, and we had a, you know, we lived in the, what was the estate manager's tin bungalow, the officer and the sergeant, and, well, when I say the officer and the sergeant, so it was the sergeant major, and my company commander, who appeared from time to time. He was shacking out with some old tart in Nairobi, and this was the problem. Awful old rattler. And anyway, he killed himself eventually. He wrote his car off and her. And we carried out a lot of patrols in the local area. We did a lot of liaison with the local farmers. And we had a very interesting time, you know, stopping. It then got into this phase of where they were stealing cattle and running them up at night into the forest and then hamstringing them and killing them. And I think that